The stadium should get a free beer on Tom Tolbert night. It would be appropriate, just saying. Maybe I should talk to our marketing people. I don't think that would go over very well with Joe.
It's time to talk to the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, Stephen Douglas Kerr. What's going on, Steve?
Well, I currently have my dog jumping all over me. I'm trying to fend her off as I perform my weekly duties with you guys.
I love it.
So don't mind Lulu in the background.
I will not mind you. I won't mind your Lulu. Don't mind my Lulu. She's sitting on me right now, staring at me.
Staring down.
What do we got going on here? We about done here? So yeah, I heard you say that. It's funny. I said at the end of the broadcast. I said a similar thing, and I actually don't think you actually have to talk to Joe. Because I think Joe would be totally fine with giving out 16,000 free beers to people on Tom Tolbert night. He would just say, yeah, we'll do it. We're just never going to have another Tom Tolbert night.
Just a one-time deal?
One-shot deal. There you go. No more, no free beers for anybody.
A one-off.
That's still quite a bit of revenue that's going down the drain. You think about it. Those beers are not cheap.
No.
No, ask Larry. Larry knows how expensive the beers are. But what I'm saying is he won't have to spend for the beers anymore because they'll have no more Tom Tolbert nights. Problem alleviated.
It's just one shot deal. Okay.
Yeah. So how did it feel? How did it feel during the press conference to be flanked by me on both sides?
It felt more like you were looming over my...
Hey, it was looming, wasn't it?
Yeah. I felt self-conscious the entire interview.
Oh, man. Would you concur? I said this earlier on. If you don't concur, that's totally fine. But I thought that was Clay. Clay looked more at ease and more in the flow and more in rhythm in that game than he's looked in any previous game.
Oh, yeah, by far. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, it was, I don't know, about 2 weeks after he, you know, made his debut how many games, maybe five or six games. So I just think it was going to be a little bit frenzied early. You know, he was going to be running on adrenaline. He was going to be in a rush. And even though he's had good moments in the first couple of weeks, last night was the first time he looked relaxed. And so it just looks like, to me, he's kind of gotten past the initial sort of adrenaline and energy of it all, and now he's just settling in and enjoying it more. But that was fun last night. He just looked really relaxed and in the flow.
Absolutely. Was that the first time? I wasn't sure. I think it was. But was that the first time since he's come back you've taken him out and reinserted him in the same quarter?
Yes. Yeah. And that was by design. You know, when he started playing, we 2 weeks ago, we wanted to have him in at the end of games and at the end of halves, because obviously that's going to be the rotation, you know, going forward. I mean, we wanted to get him ready and get him used to playing in that rotation. But what we found was, He was sitting over on that bike in the hallway for like half an hour between stints, and it was just too much. I mean, he was just going cold over there, so we changed the rotation yesterday. We started the first quarter and the second quarter, and then the plan was in the second half to have three shorter stints. So that he didn't have that long break, and that, you know, he finished the game playing the last 4 minutes or so. As it turned out, we were playing so well, we didn't have to do that. We had a big lead, but it was definitely the first time he's had a rhythm and didn't have to shut it down for like 40 minutes of real time, you know.
Did you have a nice conversation with Steph at the end of the third quarter when he was stuck at the scores table for like 2 minutes?
I know that was That was an interesting one. The game just kept going on, and it was actually good. You know, he's been playing heavy minutes lately, and while we were on that run, it was like, all right, this is fine. You know, as long as we're on a good run, Steph gets a couple extra minutes. But it was kind of funny, just him standing there, and then finally just turning around and going, all right, it's halftime.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been there before.
The team looked good. The team looked, I mean, I thought that was as crisp as I've seen you guys look offensively. That second quarter, you know, you guys are finding the mismatches and guys are finding cutters. And I don't know. It just seems like when you guys are going well, Steve, it seems like guys make that extra pass. And it just seems like the game comes easy. Was that something that was a point of emphasis pregame or – I mean, because you guys really looked sharp in that second quarter. If you could bottle it, you probably would.
Yeah, I mean, we try to do that every night, but we've been in a little bit of a rut lately, and it's interesting just how, you know, just a few things can get you going. You know, when you're playing poorly, you know, you focus on a couple of things and you get a couple of things right. Yesterday, we tried to throw the ball ahead more in transition. We tried to get some offensive rebounds. You know, we were emphasizing both of those things, and shots started going in. We also were able to play lineups that had more shooting on the floor too, because, you know, with Clay back and Otto in the lineup, you know, we played Jordan Poole with Steph and Clay for the first time. So it was a really good night. We had a lot of energy and the ball was moving, but hopefully it's a sign that our offense is kind of kicking back into gear.
Is Jordan, I'm sure he's probably aware of it. It's tougher to say than just go out there and do, but he's so much better when, I'll use a technical term here, when he doesn't jerk around with the ball. When he decides he wants to just go, and he can really beat people off the dribble. I mean, he is lightning fast to the rim, and he's a pretty good finisher. When he gets fouled, he's a great free throw shooter. I know you guys have probably talked about it with him, but does he notice those type of things, like instead of like three or four in and out dribbles, maybe one or maybe none, maybe catch it, move it, or just go and exploit the defense and try to get to the paint?
Yeah, the technical term that you used, I was it John Wooden or Henry Iba who came up with that term? I can't remember, but
I think it was Iba. It might have been Newell.
Pete Newell. I think it was Pete Newell. But I'm really impressed with your knowledge of basketball vernacular.
I'm a historian, Steve.
Fundamental expression, yep. Like yep. Jerk around with the basketball. Yeah,
he paints a vivid picture.
Yes, he does. I think a lot of young players come into the league and they, frankly, they over dribble. You know, the players who come into the league these days all dribble the ball way better than we used to because they work at it, you know, constantly growing up. And there is a place for it. But if you can streamline it into, you know, actually just beating your guy and doing it quickly and efficiently, it's like you're saying. Then the rest of the offense flows, and then there's pace to the game, and I think that's part of the challenge for Jordan. He's so gifted with the ball as a dribbler, the possibilities for him are endless. But we need him to just make that first move and attack, because we need the pace to ratchet up. We need the flow. All the stuff that our team is really good at usually comes with the ball moving. But the great thing is Jordan gives us something that we have lacked over the years, which is a guy who can, you know, just put it on the floor and get to the rim. And he did that several times last night, and he gave us a huge surge of energy. I'm really proud of him. He's had a great year, but he's still learning and growing, and he accepts coaching, and he's going to be a big part of things going forward, you know, coming off the bench in that six-man role. If he can play like he did last night, and we'll even give him some minutes, you know, with Steph and Clay, it's going to be a lot of fun to see how he impacts the team.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
I'll tell you what's exciting to me, Steve, is that, you know, you guys, when you guys space the floor and then you got Kuminga out there, I mean, that just is a huge challenge to other teams to try to defend him. And he seems some, even though he's young and he needs a lot of development, I mean, he just seems very comfortable in being in attack mode when you guys do create that space. It was great to see him. You know, I like him starting. I like him off the bench. I mean, he's just a great young talent that gets better every time you watch him.
He's really gifted, really talented, explosive. He's a great young guy. You know, he's taken to coaching really well. He's starting to open up and ask questions and communicate with his teammates and coaches. And I just think the development has been really sound. You know, we're giving him just enough and then pulling back if we feel like he's not, you know, absorbing the lessons that we're trying to teach him. And I think it's more important for a young player to actually learn all of the responsibilities before you give him playing time rather than the other way around. Because if you just give a guy playing time, maybe he's not going to take to those responsibilities at all because he's already getting the time. And so I think, you know, kind of putting the carrot out there and rewarding him when he deserves it, I think it's a great way to develop a young guy. And we're excited for what JK is doing.
Fantastic answer, by the way, when you were asked about taking him out of the starting lineup and why you decided to do that. You said, well, because I'm the head coach and I can change my mind.
That's right. Simple as that.
Yeah. Regarding James Wiseman, I know you probably don't have much of injury update, but what I'm curious about is there a point of demarcation this season where when he comes back, it could be too late? It'd be trying to get him ready and up to speed with everything that's going on when it's like, let's say, 15 games left and you're battling for 1, 2, 3 seed, whatever the case may be. Is it a case of when he's ready, he'll play? Or is there a point where you look at and go, if he's not back by this point, it's going to be kind of tough?
Yeah, there's just no blueprint for this. You know, this is such a unique set of circumstances, and we'll just have to see how it plays out. And, you know, we've thought that it was going to play out very differently than this. We thought he was going to be back by now. And I just feel so bad for James. I mean, he's working every day. He's keeping a really good positive spirit about him. But, you know, we want so badly for him to just get his career started and off the ground. And the poor guy's just dealing with you know, all the injuries. Well, I shouldn't say all the injuries, the injury. You know, with the knee, and we just don't know when he's going to turn the corner. So I do know that when he's back, the ability he has to give us that lob threat could be huge. You think about all the shooting we have, and, you know, you throw Steph and Clay and, you know, Otto Porter and Wiggs, you know, all these guys who are shooting the ball great from the three-point line. You add a lob threat into there, that's a pretty devastating weapon. So it would be great to see what that looked like, but, you know, we'll just have to see how it all plays out.
So when I was telling you about just seeing Steph standing there in the third quarter, I had flashbacks of my own career, and I'm wondering if you have any similar experiences where you get put in at the end of the game, and you don't really want to go in, but you have no choice. You go up there at the scores table, and there's like, you know, minute 15 seconds left, and the clock's just ticking down, tick, 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 and nobody's fouling. And then it gets down to about 30 seconds, and you're like, please don't foul. I don't want to walk out onto the court for like 20 seconds. I go, that's just ridiculous. Every once in a while, you get a reprieve and get yo-yoed back to the bench, end of the game, you're good. Right. But every once in a while, I'd be like, 15 seconds, oh, foul. Oh, great. I got to go into the, you know, and then you get the pity clap. Like, oh, yeah, hey, we get to see Tolbert in the game. Great. It's like, well, this really, really sucks. Did you ever have that situation?
You know, ironically, the moment that jumps out was a game at Oracle, my rookie year playing for the Suns. And, you know, I hardly ever played. Cotton Fitzsimmons was my coach, and we were losing the game, and the game was basically over, but Cotton wanted to work on an out-of-bounds play, and there was like 3 seconds left, and it's like a 10-point game. So he calls timeout, and I think somebody on our team had just fouled out. So he goes, Steve, you know, you take so-and-so. And he draws up the play. He goes, you're going to take the ball out, and, you know, this guy's going to screen for that guy, whatever. He draws the play up on the board. So I go out. I literally have not played the entire game. So I get put in with 3 seconds left. We're down 10. And Mitch Richmond's guarding me on the out-of-bounds play. The ref hands me the ball. I throw it in. My teammate shoots. He misses. The buzzer sounds. And Mitch walks over and shakes my hand and goes, Steve, great job. I thought you played really well tonight. all I could do was laugh. And he laughed. And we had a good laugh together. But
yeah, it's the best when you go in with 10 seconds. You don't need to take a shower. You're just like, oh, God, let's take my uniform off. I'm done.
Yeah. What am I doing?
See, I even have memories of sitting on the bench and looking at the clock and knowing it was getting close to time and just thinking, don't get up. Don't get up. Just sit there. And then when he got up, you almost like talk to the guy next to you. You're like, so you can do anything after the game tonight? What are you doing tonight? Tolbert. You can't hide at that point. It's
no,
all
you can't
over.
Hide.
I know, because you watch a lot of the games. You're a sports fan. I don't think we've ever seen anything like it, but just your thoughts on the weekend of NFL football that we saw last weekend. That was just nutball.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we played on Sunday, so I missed most of those two games, Rams, Buccaneers, and then the night game, the Chiefs game. So just incredible stuff. And we're flying this Sunday to Houston. So I'm so bummed. I'm such a big football fan, and you know, this Niners Rams game is going to be amazing. And
were the Rams your team, Steve, growing up?
You know, it's interesting. They were growing up, but then they moved to St. Louis, and I just lost all interest when they moved to St. Louis. So I don't really have a team now, but I love watching the game, and I've gotten to know a lot of NFL coaches kind of just through the life that we lead. We end up bumping into each other. And so I've connected with several coaches, and it's really fun for me to watch how people are, you know, kind of running their programs, going about their business and learning how other people do things. So it's fascinating. And this matchup is so incredible, because the Niners just own the Rams. They just own them. One of those things that's hard to explain. And then the fact that, I mean, I didn't realize that the estimates are that 60% of the fans are going to be Niners fans at SoFi. That's unbelievable. That is, what a bizarre set of circumstances. But I can't wait to watch. I think I'll get to watch maybe a quarter of it or so, but I can't wait to see it.
Oh, damn, you're the head coach. Tell him to leave earlier.
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Seriously?
Or like maybe, maybe I'll come down with a phantom COVID test.
Steve. that'd be fantastic. Yeah. That'll go over real well.
I'm not sure about that one.
Hey, Mike, you take it from here. I'll see you when you guys get back.
I'm out. Real quick, I know we got to run, we're over, but real quick, since you brought up the NFL, I wanted to ask you this, and you talked about talking to different coaches. Is there one coach in the NFL, even though it's a different sport, that you've been able to take something from and apply to coaching in the NBA?
I think I read a great article last year about the Kyle Shanahan, McVay, Brandon Staley, kind of tree, and I think there's a couple other guys in that.
Well, group Matt LaFleur was the guy that coached with him in Washington.
Yes, Matt LaFleur, and then Staley was with
McVay with the Rams. Yep.
Yeah. And it was a fascinating article about how they run their offense and how they teach it. And, they actually only have kind of a handful of plays, but they have all these different formations to disguise those plays. And the article was great. It was talking about how much easier it is for players to execute an offense where instead of having, 25 entirely different plays, you have maybe 7 or 8. But you run those same plays out of different formations to confuse the defense, because the formations are kind of irrelevant to the offensive guys. The main thing is you want to lock in on what your job is on the plays themselves. But having a limited amount makes it a lot easier for the players to learn them and to execute them. And so we actually copied some of that. We really tried to limit our menu of plays, but give different looks, to disguise them, but the actions themselves were, we found that that format is really a great way to teach, where you limit the kind of the mass of information, and you lock in on just a few things, but you execute those things really well. So great article, and really been fun to connect with some of those coaches.
That's really interesting. That's good stuff. Steve, best of luck this week. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the fourth quarter of the NFC Championship game.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. There you go, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, Steve Kirk.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.